You're listening to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. The following program may contain adult themes, discussion, and content that some people may find offensive. If you consider yourself likely to be offended, then perhaps you'd like to tune to another frequency for the next hour. If you have any feedback or would like to see information about our other shows, please go online to radioreverb.com.
Welcome to the HIV Hour on 97.2 FM on Radio Reverb and on DAB Plus Radio. It's a pleasure to have you join us. We've just listened to Madonna, I Feel So Free, and that was chosen by Stephen Hart, one of our wonderful presenters. And I'm joined here on Zoom with my favourite presenter, perhaps, well, I love you all equally, is the lovely Abigail. Hello, Abigail.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Abigail, as listeners will remember, is also our resident agony auntie, aren't you?
Yes.
Yeah, yes. And we've had some really good feedback from the last session we did with the agony auntie and uncles. And I've learnt that the podcast has been shared throughout the doctors in the hospital, because obviously we were talking about the Sunflower Clinic. So we've got some extra listeners there. So welcome to you if you are a new time listener as well. So Abigail, we've got some great news and feedback from the agony aunt session that we had a few weeks ago, haven't we?
Yes, we do. Yes. So the lady who sent us the question of how to access the Sunflower Clinic, we put her in touch with them. With the Sunflower Clinic, we gave an email address, thanks to you, Uncle.
Oh.
And yes, she has contacted the Sunflower Clinic, the Lawson unit, and she's going to be accessing there, and she's so happy.
Oh, that's wonderful news.
Right. She's so happy. She was actually crying on the phone saying, you don't know how much this is going to change my life.
Yeah. So, listeners, if you have a question for the Agony Auntie, or Agony Empress and the Agony Uncles, please do get in touch with us at info@hivhour.org.uk. We love hearing from you, listeners. It's your show. It's not just, we're not just doing it for our benefit. And, you know, we like to have international and national stories as well, just as well as the local Brighton Hove ones too. So please do get in touch. And if you want to just choose a song, please do get in touch. Right, so we've got lots to talk about on the show today. There's lots going on. So Josh and I went to the spring conference for Beaver and Bash. That's the British HIV Association, and that's the British Association of Sexual Health and HIV. And that was an amazing conference. It was absolutely sold out. There was 1,250 delegates there, and it was held in Liverpool. So Josh and I had to put up with each other snoring in a twin room in Liverpool, but it was well worth it to see all the other speakers and hear them. We did a couple of interviews from people from community organisations at conference, and we've also heard some of the doctors and clinicians and other people that work in HIV. So the conference itself was probably full of the nation's leading HIV experts and the leading sexual health experts. So I've learned all sorts of new things about chlamydia and gonorrhea and syphilis, but obviously HIV was my main focus. Today in the UK is election day for many areas of the country. It's not an election day in Brighton Hove area, but there is a story that I wanted to cover. And we have to be a little bit sensitive in how we do it because of pre-election sensitivities. But 15 years ago, a Mr. Nigel Farage said that people entering the country as migrants should not be given HIV treatment. And in 2015, other political parties had good words to say about Nigel Farage's comments. Plaid Cymru's Leanne Wood responded by calling the comment scaremongering and say he should be ashamed. Also, a certain Ms. Elizabeth Truss. Anyone remember her? Really?
The dancing queen.
That's the one, yeah. So at the time she was an environment secretary. She accused the UKIP leader of attention seeking, and Labour leader at the time, Ed Miliband, called the comment disgusting, and Lib Dem Joe Swinson described it as a new low. But it so happens that 3 weeks ago, he made the same comments. And it really does beg a belief that he still hasn't learnt from the comments that he made previously. So we've got two statements I'd like to read out. I'm sorry if I'm taking up all the airwave here. But I've got a statement here from the National AIDS Trust. And Robin Curry, the chief executive of the National AIDS Trust, said everybody in the UK, regardless of their immigration status, must be able to access the HIV medication they need, including throughout the full process of any asylum claims. This is both a fundamental individual right and completely in line with the medical consensus on public health and reduction of HIV transmissions. As someone on effective HIV treatment will have an undetectable viral load and can't pass on HIV to others. More broadly, the insinuation of the health tourism in Mr. Farage's comments do not stand up. There is no evidence that people come to the UK to be able to access HIV treatment. The UK has an incredible opportunity to end new cases of HIV by 2030, and we must ensure nobody is left behind in accessing vital HIV care. Everyone living with HIV has a right to treatment, and no one should ever be denied the medicine they need. I think that's quite well put there. And I'd have one other statement from the chief executive of the Terence Higgins Trust, Richard Angel OBE. He said, Nigel Farage was wrong in 2015 and he was wrong yesterday. With access to treatment, people living with HIV can live a normal, healthy life and can't pass it on. Withholding HIV treatment from anyone in the UK means more people living with HIV because there is a chance it could be passed on and means more people ill in the NHS. David Cameron, having studied the evidence closely, was right to ensure everyone in the UK with HIV had access to HIV medication. This has meant people, rather than hide their status on entry to the UK, have sought treatment, and when on treatment, you can't pass HIV on, preventing deaths and new transmissions. It's disappointing that Mr. Farage is promising to take away vital health care that could lead to more people in the UK having HIV. Instead, he should be joining the cross-party effort to end new HIV cases to do so by 2030. The UK should be the first country in the world to end new cases of HIV. It is the British-based and British-headquartered pharmaceutical companies that are leading on HIV science and innovation, and ending this epidemic could be the single best health achievement in our time. We hope to meet with Mr. Farage to discuss the realities of HIV in the UK and how he can put down the dog whistle and do the right thing to help end the epidemic. So I do hope he takes up the Terence Higgins Trust invitations to do so. It really is irresponsible to deny anybody treatment for a disease, isn't there?
I think with Nigel Farage, sometimes if he realizes that he's fading in the media, he comes out with something to make himself relevant again.
Mm. It's just sad that he hasn't learned from the backlash he had from the last time. And when you look at America and their withdrawing of the PEPFAR funding to fund lots of charities across the world, I mean, that the impact of that has resulted in deaths. There is no doubt about that. Yeah.
Yes, definitely. And when people make statements like that, like people like Nigel Farage, they forget that sometimes you could be a refugee or an asylum seeker without HIV. And then you get infected with HIV when you're already here. So where do those people stand?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. When David Cameron did look into this sort of accusation of health tourism, it's discovered that most migrants actually get HIV here. They're not allowed to receive state benefits while their asylum seeking process is happening. You know, they're stuck in sort of quite poor quality housing and accommodation, and you know, even army camps in places. And it's just you can't. We're human beings, and we know the NHS treats everybody in the UK equally as human beings, no matter where you come from. And it's just a false economy, because the cost of treating somebody with long-term HIV, untreated long-term HIV, is a lot more than the cost of treating them with HIV.
I know, and Unfortunately, that statement, I was also one of those people. And if it wasn't that the government and the doctors that I met in this country didn't treat me different from anyone, I don't know what would have done. Because up to now, we still have people who are legally supposed to be here, scared to come for treatment because they don't know if they're going to lose their status. Those rhetorics are quite scary.
Yeah, and it perpetuates stigma within wider communities as well, doesn't it? So if you just by stigmatizing anybody, you're preventing people from getting tested because they're scared of getting the results or the consequences of getting that results, whatever those results are. And it's just, I mean, we here on the show, we'd like to talk about HIV as much as possible to normalize it, but it's so important to get that language right, isn't it?
Yes, it's always the language that has to be right.
Yeah. So we'll come on to language later on, because we've both heard a great speaker recently, myself at conference, and both of us heard her speak at the recent stigma workshop in Brighton, and that's Professor Yvonne Galise. But we'll come to her in a moment. But we do have an interview with somebody that we met on the show a year ago, and we met them at the Beaver Conference when it was in Brighton, and it's Ian Montgomery, who works at Positive East. And last year he was collecting people's photographs to stitch together as a quilt, but not a memorial quilt. This was a quilt of people living with HIV. And the results were, a team of volunteers sewed together all these little photographs and put stitches through them and common threads and chose where they went. And the quilt is made out of three panels, each 6 foot by 6 foot. And there's over 4,000 photographs. It took them over 1,500 hours of stitching to combine.
Wow.
The three panels together in a triptych spell out U equals U when you stand at a distance, the way that they've chosen photographs to go with each other and the shading. So you can see the letter U in one panel, and then in the middle panel you can see the equals, and the third is another U.
Was it displayed at the Brighton in the library?
It hasn't been to Brighton yet, no. So that those were the memorial quilts, I believe. And I was
a
hanky quilt. But this is the U equals U community quilt of people living with HIV. So let us have a little listen to what Ian and Josh spoke about.
Let me tell you about a thrill.
Radio Reader. So, welcome back to the HIV Hour on 97.2 FM and RadioReverb.com. We're at the Beaver Conference in Liverpool, which has been amazing. And at the Brighton Conference last year, we met Ian Montgomery, who works for Positive East. And Ian was doing a project called U equals U
quilt.
We're back again at the Liverpool Conference. So, Ian, nice to see you again.
Yeah, nice to see you as well. This is wonderful.
How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing great. I'm really excited to be here and to show off the finished product that we've been working on for so long.
Yeah, so how's it been the last year?
Yeah, it's been wonderful. It's been a real labor of love. So for the past couple of years, especially after the Brighton conferences, when we really kicked off the project, we've just been gathering photos and spreading the word about U equals U to incorporate into this large-scale art project.
Could you just let our listeners know a little bit about the project?
Yeah, so it's the U equals U community quilt. And Positive East, we thought of the idea a few years ago, actually. It's been, almost a little over 2 years, actually. We've been sort of working on this project. And what we wanted to do was to really celebrate the message of U equals U, but to really highlight and celebrate the individuals who are behind that message, and actually put those people front and center. So we were kind of thinking around different ideas to do this. So we thought we could do like a photo book or something like that. But then you would only see each individual individually, and you wouldn't see this collective message.
Right.
And so we've been collecting photographs over the past couple of years to kind of put all of this together. And so what we've done is we've collected over around 2,000 photographs. So it's people that are living with HIV, proudly undetectable, but also importantly, allies of the U equals U message. So people who really champion that message. And we've collected their photographs, we've printed them out on fabrics, and then we had 9 stitching parties that were attended by around 175 people. Yeah, it was great. Yeah. And I could go into the beauty of those in a minute.
Yeah, but it was really good, that. Yeah,
it was absolutely fantastic. And so we had these great stitching parties at Positive East. Sometimes they were attended by 10 people, sometimes they were attended by 30 people, and we just got stitching. So we stitched around and over and through. We embellished them. We would, if somebody was wearing glasses, we would stitch over the glasses.
Absolutely.
Or a hat.
I've seen that. Yeah. I've seen it today, yeah.
It was great, and there was real no right or wrong way to do it. We just gave people needle and thread and just said, just go for it. And what we've also done, which I should sort of go back importantly, is we've mapped the photographs out so the U equals U message is clear through sort of doing some color play. So it gives that optical illusion. So the idea is from far away, you clearly see the U equals U message across 3 expansive quilt panels. But the closer you get, the message then sort of dissolves and you're just left with all of the faces and individuals that embody that message.
Very impactful, actually. We've seen it today, haven't we, David? Yes. Yeah, it's very impactful, so it's good.
Oh, good. I'm so glad to hear.
It's a community, doesn't it? When you close up, you see the whole community. Yeah.
Exactly. Yes. It's just all of these smiling faces, like looking down at you. And and just like I said, the quilting parties were so wonderful. I probably knew about 60% of the people who signed up. So we put it out there just across socials, and we put postcards around bookstores and things like that. So some of the people were quite new to Positive East. Mm. And so just a lot of like friendships were made, a lot of stories were shared.
What did you learn from that experience from it?
Yeah, I just sort of, I think if anything, this is going to sound a little daft, but I just learned like the power of coming together. I was reminded of that. And you know, sometimes we would be sitting there silently, just sort of stitching. It was very meditative. And then other times conversations would really flourish and the room would be like, would be a chorus of conversations. And, it was just, wonderful. It was also to be reminded of sort of the healing power of the arts, of course, as well as sort of stitching and, you know, stitching in a different context of, you know, the way that we stitch the AIDS quilt, which would have been a much different process. And this was more of a process of sort of celebration and life and U equals U and hope and prosperity and all of that. And a lot of the stories that sort of came through that were quite beautiful. There was one individual, I'll anonymize it completely, but she was a little bit quieter at the very beginning. And then towards the end, she was coming routinely. And it wasn't until the second to last, she began to open up about why she was there. And she had a very personal connection. I will leave it at that to HIV in the 80s and friends and family, but hadn't been able to sort of get back involved until this project.
Very therapeutic for people, I think.
Yeah.
That process of stitching things and you're just focusing, aren't you? And
exactly.
People.
Exactly. And it's, you know, the signature, you know, the stitch signature of which people, you know, you could really see people's handiwork and the way they chose to sort of link photographs together. So that was quite interesting. So there might be, you know, a yellow thread that suddenly connects 3 random people and why those 3 people, why that yellow thread. So it's interesting to sort of see how it all kind of came together and how people took on, you know, the project. Yeah. But it was very, very special. Yeah. And it's not, we're not done yet. It's just like,
What's the future going to bring?
Yeah. So just like, you know, as long as HIV stigma exists, you know, we will continue to stitch. And, we plan to hold more stitching parties, and we're going to grow and evolve the project. And this feels like something that would be, you know, more is more. So the more stitches, the more embroidery we can get on there, the better. So
after Liverpool, where is it going to go next?
Yes, it's going to be at Positive East in mid-May for the International AIDS Candlelight Memorial. And then we're still looking for spaces after that. But yeah, it'll be at Positive East on full display. I believe that's the 17th of May.
Yeah.
And then after that, we'll be looking for venues.
Please do let us know what we'd like to be at. And we'll try and get it to Brighton if we can, if we will see what, if people know we can club together and find a place for it.
That would be wonderful.
We'd love, you know, we've enjoyed seeing it, and it'd be nice to.
Looking for ourselves, isn't it? Yeah, trying to find where we are.
Yeah. There's definitely a Brighton posse. Yeah. There's a little group
of Brighton posse,
people.
Yeah.
But I'm sure our friends and families would like to see it as well.
Yeah. What's been the reaction here with people?
Yeah, it's been really beautiful. I'm really pleased. I mean, I sort of, I guess you can say led the project, but we had 175 people did the project. So I'm really, you know, we spent thousands of hours of stitching. And so I'm just so pleased to see people's response so positively towards the work of all those who came to Positive East. But it's been a real joy to see people sort of searching for themselves.
Yeah.
And finding other people, and sometimes, you know, you'll see, you're like, oh, there's James. Oh, look, that's my neighbor's daughter, whatever. And then we've also, so that's been really, really special. A lot of people taking pictures in front of it, and which makes, you know, me very happy that people are celebrating the work of so many people that contributed to it, as well as the thousands that are in there.
Yeah.
And then what we've done as well is people do repeat across each three panel, because we wanted people to be part of each part of that message. And that was done purposely, as well as the idea that it's sort of kind of like a rosary, or it becomes kind of cyclical. So you'll be looking and you'll see yourself, and then you'll kind of, your eyes will sort of wander around the panel, and you might see yourself again. And it just becomes this kind of like cyclical sort of interaction that you have as you sort of like continue to kind of see yourself repeating throughout. And so in total, it's 4,000 photographs that we stitched over.
Wow.
So
it's got
a lot
the
of
U equals U message through it, haven't you? So that's really as well, so that's good.
Yeah.
As the U equals U quilt. Yeah.
That's what we've decided to call it.
Brilliant.
So the U equals U community quilt. So and to really kind of help us to celebrate U equals U in a way that isn't just a pamphlet.
Yeah.
You know, we thought that this might be a slightly different way to do it. So then also kind of recognizing and celebrating sort of a visual language that has such deep roots within the HIV community, and that's quilting, as we all know. So we want to sort of reimagine the AIDS quilt in the era of U equals U and sort of see how we could play around with that. But it's very much inspired by and in celebration of and driven by, you know, the NAMES project and the AIDS quilt that was very important.
That's brilliant. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
We'll see you around, and thank you. Yeah, we'll get you back on the show again soon.
Great, that would be wonderful. Thank you.
Thanks, Ian.
Thanks. Bye.
I conferred with our furry friend.
Radio Reverb.
Wow, what a great interview there from Josh and Ian Montgomery, and you could hear me piping up in the background there. Sorry for any disturbance or background noise. We were at a very busy conference, and we had to try and find a quiet space, and even that wasn't very quiet. All these noisy doctors and nurses running around, chatting about things. Anyway, welcome back to the HIV Hour on 97.2 FM in the Brighton and Hove area, and we also broadcast on DAB Plus Radio, search for Radio Reverb. The station itself has its own website, radioreverb.com, and if you miss the 7 PM showing of this episode, then you can always click on radioreverb.com, listen again, and you can listen to this episode again at your leisure. And then a couple of weeks later, we turn this into a podcast, and that's downloaded all over the world and is available on your podcast of choice. We are really pleased and proud to be sponsored by Jack Russell Technologies. And just thank you everybody that listens to us. You can email the show at info@hivhour.org.uk. And we also have a modest website of our own, which is www.hivhour.org.uk. Abigail, what did you think of that interview? It's lovely to hear about all the stitching going on, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's so amazing the work that people are doing. Yeah, yeah. It really humbles me to see that there are people there still fighting.
Yeah.
And now we shouldn't be fighting. We should all be comfortable knowing that HIV is just another disease that we don't have to campaign against. We just need to talk about.
Yeah, we do. We do need to talk about it because we're right. I mean, the goals for 2030 is to get into zero HIV transmission is a very tight goal, but we certainly believe that we could be the first country to stop new HIV transmissions, because we know from the sort of the R number that there's roughly just a few thousand people out there who are undiagnosed. If we can get those tested, we can get them on treatment, and then nobody else will get it. We could be the last one standing, and I hope that is the case.
I hope so too.
I mean, we've eradicated smallpox, a disease. Let's do the same for HIV, and other countries can maybe learn from our example. But we need to talk about it, don't we?
Yes, and we need to be open, talk about it freely.
So talking about language, let's have a, do you remember the talk that Yvonne, Professor Yvonne Galise gave at the Stigma workshop that was very kindly hosted by Gary Pargeter and Lunch Positive a few weeks ago. Yvonne is very passionate about women's matters, isn't she? And she actually is one of the lead doctors in the Sunflower Clinic.
The very best.
Yeah, she is good. And I love listening to her speak. She's so inspiring. But you know, from what we know, I mean, who is the greatest group living with HIV in the world today, Abigail?
It's women.
It is. You're absolutely right.
It's women.
Yeah. And you know, and new infections also. Who's being diagnosed more than other groups? It's women.
It's women.
Yeah. So, you know, we really must be able to give women PrEP. We know that uptake for PrEP. So for listeners that don't know, who are new to the show, PrEP stands for pre-exposure prophylactic. So in a way, think of it a bit like a condom, but it's taken in tablet form. So this tablet, if you take it before having a sexual encounter, this will prevent you from catching HIV, because obviously, you know, people do still use condoms for preventing sexually transmitted infections, but if you want to conceive a child, then you've obviously got to not have a barrier method, haven't you? So taking PrEP will protect a woman, and there's long acting PrEP, which I think is an injectable form. I think there's oral PrEP, which I've mentioned is taken as a tablet, and also there's a dapivirine ring, which I wasn't aware of until recently. Have you heard of that?
I heard it many years ago. Yeah. I was even surprised to hear when Dr. Yvonne spoke about it.
I think it's not as effective as current modern PrEP, either the injectable form or oral PrEP. So the language, she talks about language, didn't she?
Sorry, before we go into the language, how accessible is PrEP?
So PrEP is available in any GUM clinic and HIV clinic, I believe. I don't think it's readily available in pharmacies, like just high street pharmacies. So it does need a little bit of forward planning if you wanted to have access to PrEP. But you can also get what is called digital PrEP, and it's not, you know, it's not a something that you implant into your head, but it's basically going online, isn't it, an ordering PrEP, and I think it comes discreetly in the post.
That's very good information for our listeners.
Yeah, so perhaps we could put something on our website for more details on how to access that. But I think the biggest thing is, I don't think people are very well aware of it, are they?
Exactly, that's what I wanted to say. Mm. I've never seen a poster of PrEP in GP surgeries.
Mm.
Or pharmacists, especially pharmacists, because everyone goes to the pharmacy.
Yeah.
I've not seen. I've seen for morning after pill, but I've not seen a PrEP poster.
Right. Is there such a thing as, I mean, I forgive my ignorance, but is there such a thing as family planning clinics, isn't there?
Yes, but now you can go. I've seen in some pharmacies, there's posters advertised that if you need a morning after pill, talk to us.
Right. And this is really a morning before pill, isn't it?
It's the morning after.
No, yeah, but the PrEP is like a morning before pill.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's morning before, but what I'm saying, it would be nice to have posters next to each other saying people can understand what it is. Because I don't think there's enough information out there.
No, I agree. I haven't seen anything myself. I mean, being a gay man, I've seen PrEP adverts within gay press and gay websites and things like that. And there is an organisation called PrEPster, which I know has been targeting gay men. And I'm going to have to look up whether it's...
Which really makes me... I don't know whether said is the right word.
Mm.
Which really makes me feel like we still have this mindset that this thing, PrEP, is needed by a certain group of people. Gay men are not the only one having sex, for goodness
sake.
Us heterosexuals, we do enjoy it too.
Of course. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for heterosexuals enjoying sex.
Exactly. So we also need to be told about PrEP. Mm. Even at maternity clinics, we need it. Yeah. Why is it not in a maternity ward? We need it everywhere where women meet, where we're talking about sex, where we're talking about anything. Yeah, we need it too.
Mm. So
everyone needs it.
Yeah, so for listeners that are listening, well, I hope you're, that's a silly thing to say, isn't it? But hello, listeners. If you're interested in getting PrEP, as a resource that I mentioned, is called PrEPster. So that's www.prepster.info, and that gives you all the information about how you can buy PrEP online, where it is available in the UK, and the availability from country to country, because there's obviously different, that's within the United Kingdom. So in Scotland and Wales, there are different policies, because obviously they have different governments. But if you go to prepster.info, they've got some very good advice about where to go for PrEP. And let's, in the meantime, campaign for better visibility for PrEP aimed towards all people. Let's have another song now, and this is going to be Radiohead, Everything in Its Own Place. Welcome back to the HIV Hour on 97.2 FM in the Brighton and Hove area. Now, as we said before, Josh and I went to conference last week, and we met some fantastic people from all walks of life, from professionals to volunteers to people living with HIV. It was quite noisy at conference, so we have agreed to interview people away, you know, after conference is finished, just so we can give them proper time and a nice quiet space in which to talk about their work. So we're looking to hear more about what it's like to live with HIV in Liverpool. And we'll be hearing from a representative from the George House Trust, so we look forward to hearing that. We've invited one of the drug companies to talk about their work with the community. We have to be careful, because obviously they're not allowed by law to talk about their products, but they do support communities and they support research projects. So we're in discussions to have some of those conversations. I don't think we've ever covered somebody from the pharmaceutical companies, so it'll be interesting to hear from. And no doubt there'll be other follow-ups from conference as well, once we've studied all the notes that we went to from lectures and presentations. I did have the pleasure of interviewing one of the people that presented one of the posters that were at conference, and there were well over 100 of them. And let's hear my interview with the wonderful Angelina Namimba. So I'm joined by a very good friend of the show. It's Angelina Namimba. Hello, Angela, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you, David. How are you?
Yeah. So we are at the Beaver and Bash conference, aren't we? And you have a poster that you've presented to the conference.
Mm-hmm.
And so tell us the title.
Yes, of course. So the title of the poster is called Learning from the Date Night, Each One, Teach One Model.
Right.
This is a culturally grounded, co-created psychosocial support model to provide culturally relevant psychosocial support for women living with HIV.
Mm-hmm.
And it was co-created with women living with HIV and clinical psychologists.
Right. So why what was the start of this process? Why was this poster, how did it come about?
So one of the reasons why we kind of set up the project was because, as you know, I mean, in terms of accessing mental well-being services, sometimes it's really hard to be able to get an appointment. Yet, of course, as women living with HIV, you have lots of issues going on. And a lot of women do have mental well-being issues. And so what we wanted to do was to create a model whereby a group of women could access their psychosocial support in a safe space, but also have access to a clinical psychologist, but not just around clinical psychology, but also the model is such that we have a clinical psychologist coming in to, you know, do a presentation on different aspects of mental well-being, and then they have access to have us as a group discussion, talk about some of the issues they come across, share coping strategies within the women, as well as having the clinical psychologist on board. And then after that, we have a mindfulness session to kind of close around the date night. And we call it date night because we held it every once a month.
Oh, right. Oh,
yeah.
I see.
Every
right.
Once a month
and
a Friday.
What does phrase each one teach one mean?
So the each one teach one was because we are only, it's an online session, group session, but we're only able to reach a certain number of women. So what we had said with the women was that, you know, once you access the group support, what we'd really love for you to do is to go and pass on what you've learned to another woman living with HIV. So in that way, we're learning, but we're also teaching each other.
Yes, yeah, that builds community, doesn't it? And trust within, from woman to woman.
Absolutely.
And I love the fact that it's group work and it's online. So yeah. What has been the response to it?
Well, the response was amazing.
Yeah.
I think one of the things is the fact that it's actually online, it means many more women can access it. But even though it was a program that was created for the UK, sometimes we'd have women logging on from Kenya,
really?
From Botswana, just because it's online.
Yes.
So, and having the different groups of women online meant that people could talk about the issues that they face, but a lot of them are quite similar in terms of mental well-being or, you know, mental health issues.
Mm.
But having access to a clinical psychologist on tap.
Yes.
And I have to, you know, stop and say thank you very much to Jenny and Felicity. The clinical psychologists actually offer their time pro bono.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's wonderful.
They did that. And what was a good thing about it was a year-long project. We had the date night once a month, every end of the month on a Friday. But the topics that the clinical psychologist covered had all been decided by the women at the beginning of the year.
Right. Oh, really? Well in advance.
Because we asked them, what would you like us to do? And they said, this is what we'd like. So we asked them for the topics they would like the clinical psychologist to cover.
Were there any sessions where you just ran out of time to discuss what you wanted to do, so you had to carry on with that topic the next month?
There were a couple of them, and I can't remember the topics, but we had to do the two-parter.
Yes.
I mean, the whole session from beginning to end is 2 hours.
Yes.
So the first 25 minutes, the clinical psychologist presents. That does a, you know, presentation on the topic. We record that, then we stop the recording. Then we have discussion for the rest of the time. And then the end of the session, we have, you know, a few minutes of mindfulness. But the time just flew.
I did mindfulness myself.
Absolutely.
Well done on the post. I think it's visually appealing.
Thank you so much.
I look forward to hearing more about it. And I'm wishing you a very happy conference.
Thank you very much. And thank you for speaking to me. And wishing you all the best too, David.
Thank you.
I've talked enough. I think it's time. We're going to have just a quick radio jingle, and then I'm going to learn all about the wonderful Empress Abigail and her journey living with HIV.
Radio Reverb.
I probed into its mysteries. Every clue told me a different story.
Radio Reverb.
Abigail, it's lovely to have you as a co-presenter. How did the little baby Abigail get to be a co-presenter on the HIV Hour?
Oh, it's a long story. So I'll just keep it short. So I came to UK in 2001. And that very same year, I was diagnosed with HIV. And it was late stage HIV. I didn't know I had it. I had HIV. I was functioning. But I had what they call toxoplasmosis, which is a membrane that covered my brain. It was such a long journey. It took me maybe 15 years to be able to feel like me again.
Mm.
Because in the process of being diagnosed with HIV, I think the very week when I was diagnosed with HIV, I believe I died.
Right.
Because I still remember people kneeling down trying to wake me up and calling my name. I was on the floor and they were shocking me. This was in Radio Surrey. And from then, I feel that was when this Abigail was born.
Right.
Because I had to learn to, I was transferred from there to Brighton, the Elton John Center.
Yes, I know it.
I'm talking of many years ago.
Mm.
And then there, I had to learn to speak again.
Mm.
I learned to walk. I remember learning to eat a fork and knife, just holding a fork.
Mm.
I remember that's when 9/11 happened, I think. And seeing people crying, I'm like, why are they crying? This is happening on TV. That's how much I had to start everything else.
Yeah.
So I've got this good story, but I don't think we've got time to talk about it, of my angel in a biker suit. In a nutshell, I met a man when I was at Elton John who was also living with HIV for about 11 years. And he told me I was going to be okay. This man was smoking a cigarette. He was going to France on his bike, on his motorbike. And I said to myself, excuse me, if this man is smoking cigarettes and he's been living with HIV for 11 years and he's going to France on a motorbike, what about me? I've never smoked. I'm going to leave. And that very day, I decided to leave.
Right.
I worked hard on teaching myself to read again.
Mm.
I taught myself to talk again. I had physio that would help me walk up and down the stairs, like outside. But then I started doing things slowly, 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 until I started reinventing myself. I told myself, I've been given a second chance with God. I'm not going to, I'll always look good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I felt, before I went after myself. And from that day, I said, I wanted to be a queen, but I couldn't because there's so many queens where I live here in Brighton.
Yes, there are.
And they'll be snatching my crown. So I decided to be the empress.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, I've met a lot of women living with HIV. I have personally helped a lot of women living with HIV, and they've also helped me. The journey of being, I don't know, I should call it coming out, but the journey of being comfortable with who I am in my own skin as a woman living with HIV.
Yeah.
Taken long, and I do understand self-stigma is a thing.
Mm.
And it took me a long time. Thanks to charities in Brighton, I don't know whether I should mention them, and the Lawson Unit, they're the best doctors ever.
Yeah.
And I'm always grateful to them. And people like you, you might not know that you've been part of my journey in a long time. And people like Gary, I've known him like all my life.
Mm.
You became the brothers I never had.
Oh.
Because that time when I was diagnosed with HIV, we had a place called Open Door.
Yeah, yeah.
And there were not many women living with HIV.
No.
So most people I met were gay men or just men.
Mm.
I didn't even know whether they're gay or straight, but I just knew that most of them were men and they embraced me. And one thing they did bad, they touched me. They took me clubbing.
Right, really?
And I became addicted to clubbing.
Did you? Oh, really?
So they made me live again. They made me know that I was human. It is okay to be who I am.
Yeah.
And this is, I always say, these are the cards that God dealt me.
Mm.
And it's up to me now to make lemonade out of these lemons.
Yes.
Because it's all about me.
Mm.
I love me.
Mm.
If someone don't love me as much as I love me, then it's their loss because they're missing out on this beautiful love I have to give.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Because HIV is, right now, HIV is just, I would say HIV is like a lodger living in my body that I can't get rid of.
No, yeah, yeah.
So I've decided that we have to coexist
together. Yeah.
Because I can't get rid of it, but I have to accept it's not going anywhere. And we have to coexist. It doesn't define me.
Mm.
You would know I've got HIV unless I tell you, because I look like everyone else.
Yes.
The days of thinking HIV is AIDS is like that are also gone. It's just another illness. If you take your medication, if you stay on treatment, it's important to go and see your doctors, your nurses, whatever, have your blood, so that you know exactly And the thing is, you know exactly how you're doing. And the thing is, with my clinic, beautiful Yvonne Gillies, they'll sit you down, even the nurses, they'll tell exactly what is going on in your blood. So you know exactly what's going on.
Yeah.
Which is quite amazing.
I think with HIV care, because we see we've got to have a long relationship with our doctors, because we have HIV yes. for the rest of our lives. We have yes. this, you know, they understand us, they understand our situation, they're not judgmental at all. But we also get all the health checks that we wouldn't normally get if we didn't know we were living with HIV. So we get more health checks than a healthy person. Well, no, and that's a healthy person is the wrong word to use. A person
who's not living with HIV.
Yeah. As we said earlier, language is so important, isn't it?
Yes. My sister used to say, oh, don't get this in the wrong way, but I think you're more healthier than I am. I'm like, what do you mean? He said, girl, you get tested. That's when we used to be tested every 2 months. Yeah. Say, girl, you go get tested every 3 months. Mm. So if there's anything going on with your blood, you know it. Whereas me, I don't go to my GP unless I need to see them. They say yes.
Yeah, I mean, my visits to the GP are rare. I mean, I think I've had one since COVID. And I only see, well, I had my appointment with my consultant at the Lawson unit. And here we are in April, and I'm not going to see her for another year, so I wish her a happy Christmas. Too soon? I don't know. But I won't see her until after Christmas, so I might as well wish her a happy new year as well while I'm at it. But yeah, the care we have is fantastic, isn't it?
It's so amazing, amazing.
So, what happened next?
Oh, you still want me to go on?
Yeah.
So from there, I just started teaching myself, loving myself. I think the best way is loving yourself. My story is such a big story. Another time, I think if you could give me a segment just to tell you about my story, because my story is about a girl who came to England not knowing what to expect, not knowing that she's living with HIV, or she was infected with HIV, and become this woman who sits in front of you. And it was not easy, because when I came to England, I've just come from a country where everyone, I'm sorry about the language, was dying like flies, left, right, and center. So to me, when I was told, you've got HIV, I thought, this was my prayer. I said, God, why would you bring me to this country to die? Because I've left two boys. One was 9, one was 3. And I left my boys. And I'm thinking, why would you bring me to this country to die, God? Why didn't you just let me die in my country with my children around me? It's only later. I'm a woman of faith. So it's only later when God said to me, girl, I brought you here to live. Because if you have stayed where you think you could, you would have died.
Yes, of
You'd
course.
Have been history.
Yeah, you were saved. Yeah.
Yes.
And that is and having a diagnosis in this country means that you can live.
Yes.
With HIV. Quite normally.
No, it means we just live a normal life, just like Jack and Jill.
Yes, exactly. We're just normal. And that's one of the things I love about the show. Yeah, just normal. We're human. Yeah. I think that gives other people strength to see us living well, doesn't it? Because we break.
Yeah, they call it thriving. I don't know about that.
Yeah, well, with the HIV and thriving. Yeah. I mean, I'm thriving, not surviving. In the old days, we used to try and survive. Now, we thrive. Yes. And it's a wonderful thing. And I'm so grateful. And I'm, as you are too. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm very grateful. Yeah. So here I am, the Empress.
Yes.
Not the Queen.
Right. I feel there's another installment to this story, and I think we'll leave it there for now, because it's been fascinating and it's been quite revealing already what you've told us. So you've chosen a song which ties up what you've just told us extremely well. Can you introduce the song for us?
Yeah, this song is called I Celebrate Me by Inga Rose. Thank you for listening, and please tune in next time for more from me, the Empress.
And from me.
No, from me.
Oh, okay. All right, then. It's all right. Then.
from all the uncles and the aunties. Tune in for next installment of our stories, instead of inspiring stories.